You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Only another day or so of this. Here he goes.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. He's probably tired of me doing this, because I'm a little tired of doing this, but we have to have it accurate. We can't say he's live at Lake Wissota. He's not.
Oh, no. No.
He's the founding editor of Up North News. He's Pat Kreitlow.
And here he is now. Thank you, Parker. Also appreciate it very much. Nice to have you back here on this Wednesday morning, October 8th, again for another day or two here from Texas, and then back to the Lake Wissota studio, which will be awfully nice, but always nice to visit family as well. Coming up and standing by is Ellie Bordeaux, our new newsletter editor at Up North News, and then later this hour in our homeroom segment, we will be talking to an official for an education advocacy group, talking about how down here in Texas, the growth of the voucher school program funded by taxpayers has been explosive to the point of troubling. And so we'll see what kind of lessons we can take away from Texas to prevent what could become a billion-dollar boondoggle for taxpayers supporting private schools and public schools. Should taxpayers really be asked to fund two education systems in Wisconsin? We'll talk all about that coming up. And then at 8:35, we're going to be talking to Chuck Collins, grandson of Oscar Meyer. So he knows a thing or two about family fortunes, and he specializes in wealth inequality issues and has a new book out called Burned by Billionaires, and about the changes that'll be necessary to the American political system before billionaires ruin too much more of society, the planet, our politics, and more. So if you can't hang around for that at 8:35, be sure to subscribe to us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify and follow us that way, or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along. And of course, we'd love to have you follow along with our newsletter, our unabashedly Wisconsin news that's provided every weekday by Ellie Bordeaux. You just sign up at upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner, and the aforementioned Ellie Bordeaux joins us now to talk all about what's in today's issue and beyond. Ellie, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Pat?
Good, thank you. So good to see you again here. And you've come back for a second week. So Parker and I clearly
didn't scare away. Not, wow.
Yeah. No. Nope. We did good.
You're back.
No, you did not. I'm back.
Yep. So Ellie's been producing the newsletter. What are we at? 4 weeks here, roughly.
Yeah, like just over a month, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, and we've appreciated it very much as we just continue to keep things rolling on stories that we cover at Up North News, some of the news stories, but then a whole lot of Wisconsin features as well. And we talked a lot in the past couple of days about it being Banned Books Week and coverage in the newsletter about that. But you also note that this is National Voter Education Week. And again, we don't have an election here anytime soon, but there's probably never a bad time to get to know more about, you know, what you need to do to be a registered voter and a good voter, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this week, especially for National Voter Education Week, there's never a bad time to check your voter registration status. Make sure you're up to date on that. I remember I've talked to plenty of people that are like, I don't even know if I'm registered to vote, that kind of thing. So I think it's really important to make sure everyone's educated on what your polling place is, where are you registered, that kind of thing. Make sure everything's up to date. So yeah, bringing awareness to that is, there's no bad time for that for sure.
No, and again, you've been doing this long enough now as a voter and as a journalist to know that there are plenty of people who like to complain about things, and then you ask them if they vote, and they're like, oh, no, voting won't do me any good or whatever. And I feel like you and Parker already, despite, you know, being younger adults, I think you're already ready to throw that back at people. The old, you know, if you're not voting, you can't complain.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's that kind of thing is a little bit frustrating. So it's super important to go out and vote. You know, a democracy, that's how it works, is if you go out and vote, and can't do that if you're not registered. So make sure you check that, all that stuff.
It works better if you participate.
Yeah. Exactly. And so you've got this new section called Civic Check-In. What's that about?
Yeah. So every week, every Wednesday, we're going to be starting, or I've started doing civic check-ins. So every week we're going to be taking a look at a new topic of just to check in on your civics. You know, do you know what this means? Is it impacting you? Just make sure people are informed on those kinds of things. So today we talked about authoritarianism and if it's impacting your daily life, what that is, what that looks like, those kinds of things. So.
And it's important to do that because there are words that get bandied about: authoritarianism, fascism, socialism, communist, a democratic republic. Are we a democracy or are we a republic? And so any of these little stories that can help shed some light make for more informed voters. And so Ellie's doing that through the newsletter. And then, of course, here on the radio show, we're bringing back what we've called Movement Mondays, part of the movement toward protecting democracy, where we have different groups come in on Monday mornings and talk about what their groups are doing to educate voters or get them registered or get people informed on the issues. And our friend Abby is working very hard to find some of the guests for those and solicit op-ed columns from them that run on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. So many ways that you can stay, you know, plugged in and increase your civic engagement, which, by the way, is at the heart of what we're all about at Up North News, is just boosting your civic engagement. However, we're also in the business of boosting your appetite for things and for food and for drink. And I recall that when we first talked about doing this story, the headline in the newsletter today is "Get a Taste of the Best of the 8 Best Food Halls in Wisconsin." And he had people going, "Food hall? What do you mean by that? Is that like the food court at the mall?" And no, if some folks who live near them say the Milwaukee Public Market might be the best known of them. But these are, well, tell people more about food halls and, you know, how you can find all kinds of variety at them.
Yeah, I mean, I think I love the Milwaukee Public Market. I think it's, maybe I'm a little biased, but that's one of my favorite. But food halls for me is, or what I think of it as, is like, it's a place where there are a bunch of different vendors. You can go check out a bunch of different things. You've got a bunch of different options, you know, kind of take a taste of everything. So this story really dives into that. There's places all in Milwaukee. There's Mequon. There's Madison. I mean, you've got options all over the state. And this story really takes a look at that, like the Milwaukee Public Market. We've got the Mequon Public Market. We've got the Market on the River in Chippewa Falls.
I was going to say that's the new one here, the Wisconsin Farmers Union put together when they overhauled this old building downtown right by the river and have turned it into, again, one of these food halls where you have different, you know, eating options, but you also have other markets and other vendors as well. So it's not the malls of the 70s and 80s. They're smaller and they're much more with an emphasis on local.
Yes, absolutely. So this story totally takes a look at all those things. And I mean, I think about the Milwaukee Public Market. I don't necessarily have experience at these other places or the one in Chippewa Falls, but I think about the Milwaukee Public Market and you've got a spot where you can eat and it's, you can take a little taste of everything. It's great. I love them. So.
Mm-hmm. So again, we've got that story again in our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. That is there as well. And let's see, what else do we have in there for today? Oh, we have, well, that's the story I worked on. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a new bill out there to ban absentee ballot drop boxes. And again, it's a bill that's not going to get past Governor Tony Evers, but it does, again, say something that we have lawmakers in the state who would remove the absentee ballot drop box option to voters. And so we just want to make sure that people know about it, right, Ellie?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important to, again, keep people informed on those kinds of things, what's happening around the state, what's happening at our Capitol. So yeah, it's super important.
Okay. Let's see. Tony says on YouTube, "Oh, it's like a malt shop." Sure, it is. Rob from Tigerton says, "Good morning, Ellie. I love your work on the newsletter." And while we've got Rob here, he says, "Good morning from Tigerton. Clear and 32 degrees, the coldest since early May." He says, "I mowed 4 yards in Tigerton yesterday. It was more mowing leaves than grass with the first freeze, that this could be the last week of mowing." Yeah, we've got the first freeze has definitely hit here. So mowing leaves is going to be much more the issue than it is going to be mowing grass, which means that Ellie is getting right into the thick of, here's where to see fall colors. around the state.
Totally. Yes, exactly. We've taken a look at that, and all that stuff is in for the rest of fall. We've got a ton of fall activities all throughout Wisconsin. We talked about this, I think, a little bit last week of our fall guide. Mm-hmm. So that's published on our site now too. You can take a look at all the different fun activities, those kinds of things. We have stories on our site of when the leaves will peak, those kinds of things. Where are they at now? So fall in Wisconsin is my favorite.
There's not going to be any shortage of things to do. Is there anything on your own personal calendar, any road trips that you've got coming up, or I don't know, maybe you've got Packers or Brewers tickets coming up to something?
Well, I am going to Madison for the Ohio State game, to the game, but I'm going to Madison to watch the game. We'll see how that goes. You know, Badgers have been a little bit rocky this season, but fingers crossed.
it's an experience, right, Parker? People are there for the experience more so than the score, which is what we say when you're playing one of the top teams in the country, right?
And you're not a good team.
And you're not a good team. Yes, we have to add that as well. So, all right, for all that and more of the things that Ellie's working on in our newsletter, sign up for it over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the top banner and get on board the weekday newsletter that she puts together, the Sunday morning one that I work on as well. And Ellie will join us on Wednesdays to give us a little taste of what's in some of these issues. Ellie, great to talk to you as always. Hope you have a wonderful day.
Yes, same to you. Thank you.
You bet. Now, tomorrow, Sharita Booker is going to be here, and we will be talking about weekend events that are coming up around Wisconsin. But Sharita also puts together some of the more popular posts of the past week. I mean, she posts everything that goes on Up North News social media, and then she shares with us some of the statistics of, you know, what's been popular lately. And that includes, over the past few days here, the Ellsworth teacher who lost her job over a social media post dealing with the Charlie Kirk murder. And what does that say when a congressman can attack a teacher's First Amendment rights like that? There's also the story that Selena Heller told us about on Monday about a woman from La Crosse and her, you know, rather emotional reaction to the prospect of not being able to afford health insurance anymore as the enhanced tax credits for the Affordable Care Act get set to expire at the end of this year and Republicans not wanting to renew them. Now, that still could change because that's really what's at the heart of the current government shutdown. But for the moment, a growing number of people are starting to realize what could happen to their health insurance bill if these enhanced premium credits are not extended. And so small wonder that story got a lot of clicks over the past week. Same goes for the new backdoor abortion ban that came from the big bloated boondoggle from the president. It includes language in there that cuts Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood does not get taxpayer funds for its abortion care services, but does for all kinds of other basic health services done in clinics all across the country, many that serve rural areas. And yet now that funding is looking to be cut, and essentially Planned Parenthood is forced to cut its abortion care services, at least temporarily, while that part of the law is being challenged in court. So those are just three examples that you could find on Instagram, searching for Up North News WI, about stories that are getting a lot of clicks, a lot of likes, a lot of shares, and a lot of comments. And we appreciate you doing that with everything that we put up on social media is a share and let folks know that you saw it on Up North News. All right, we will be talking about the voucher programs here in Texas and then back in Wisconsin coming up in 15 minutes. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
We have got Brewers baseball coming up this afternoon across the Civic Media Radio Network. Stations in Hayward and Racine Kenosha, Park Falls, Oshkosh, Richland Center will all have Game 3 of the National League Division Series. Theoretically, you know, fingers crossed, the Brewers could sweep the Cubs. This is the first game of the series at Wrigley Field. It's the best 3 out of 5, and the Brewers are up 2 games to none, having taken the first 2 at American Family Field. Now we see if they can clinch it later this afternoon at Wrigley Field. And again, the pregame will begin at 3:30 on those aforementioned Civic Media stations. It's part of a full boatload of Division Series games today. The first one will be Seattle versus Detroit at 2 o'clock, and Seattle won last night to take a 2-1 lead in that series. Then there's also tonight, the Blue Jays from Toronto versus the New York Yankees at 6 o'clock. Toronto leads that series 2 games to 1. It looked like they were going to sweep the series last night, but the Yankees had their biggest ever comeback in the postseason. They were down 6-1 at one point and went on to win the game 9-6. Last night. So Toronto's still up 2 games to 1. So Toronto could clinch that series at Yankee Stadium this evening. And then the other game in the National League Division Series is Philadelphia at Los Angeles. Phillies Dodgers playing at 8 o'clock, and the Dodgers lead that series 2 games to none. So theoretically could sweep that tonight. But again, all the focus for us is on Brewers Cubs coming up at 3:30 for the pregame. All right, let's get you thinking about our guest coming up at 8:35, and that will be Chuck Collins from Patriotic Millionaires. He has this new book out about the billionaire class. It's something he's familiar with, coming from one of these families that has, you know, generational wealth, but he has chosen to become active in calling attention to wealth inequality and the way that, you know, the world's number of billionaires. In the year 2020, the year of the pandemic, the wealth of the world's billionaires grew by 54%. And it's only getting to be more. You know, 10% of the population owns 93% of the wealth in the stock market. And so we always hear that as the stock market is doing well, well, that just helps everybody else. That lifts all the boats. Well, it lifts some yachts more than the rest of the boats. And Chuck Collins is going to talk more about that coming up. But he was interviewed for a newspaper article by The Guardian in the UK, which came out a couple of days ago, where he talks about how the system that perpetuates wealth inequality is purposely opaque to most Americans. They simply don't see the ways in which some of these folks not only got wealthy, but continue to maintain it, protect it by the way they're able to have political power. And that doesn't surprise a lot of people. Like, you know, we have a day and age where political donations tend to rule the roost, but a lot of folks don't connect the next dot. And that is that they're not only protecting their wealth, they're building on it through what he calls wealth extraction. In other words, having their political buddies do things that move money from the middle class to the billionaires, which is kind of funny because, again, when you hear from the far right, you always hear about this transfer of wealth. And for them, they always mean, oh, it's going from hardworking people in the middle class to those, you know, lazy people who, you know, rely on a government handout. No, that's not the wealth transfer that's actually happening here. The wealth transfer that's actually happening is going from the middle class to the billionaire class, which, again, is growing at an exponential rate. And it's only getting worse. If anything, what's happening this year since Donald Trump took office may finally be helping the public understand that this is about extraction of wealth by billionaires. And when I say the billionaire class, he also points out in the book, we're talking people also in the hundreds of millions of dollars. They may not technically have $1 billion yet, but they still have enough wealth to amass this kind of political power that enables them to do the kind of thing that Donald Trump and Republicans are doing right now, right out in the open. They're saying, we're going to have these cuts to Medicaid. We're not going to renew the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. And as much as they want to say, well, we're doing it to save money, it's not saving money, because what's plain as day out there is that all of this cutting of healthcare programs is being turned into tax cuts for the super rich. And I mean, there's no denying that. It's right there in black and white that that's what it's doing. And it's not even a one-to-one trade, okay? It's not like, you know, $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts over the next 10 years translates into $1 trillion worth of tax cuts for the very wealthy. It's not just that. They're getting tax cuts even more than that. Even with all of the cuts to Medicaid and to the Affordable Care Act and to SNAP and to farm conservation programs and everything else, Trump and congressional Republicans are still going to add another $4 trillion to the national debt. That's how massive these tax cuts are that go to the billionaire class. And that's the wealth extraction that we're talking about. You're not necessarily writing a check to a billionaire, but you're paying your fair share of taxes. They are not. You're not seeing the tax relief. You're certainly not seeing the inflation relief. You're not seeing the healthcare benefits that you thought you were going to get. And by the way, now, if you're a federal employee, President Trump yesterday was talking about how, you know, how federal employees get back pay when a government shutdown's over. He's talking about canceling the back pay as well. It's a very explicit wealth transfer that we will be talking about in just over an hour with Chuck Collins. But coming up next, our homeroom segment, talking about a Texas-sized problem with school voucher. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. At 7:35, nice to have you along here all across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow, live this week down in Dallas doing some family visits, keeping up on the Wisconsin headlines, and in this segment, adding a bit of a Texas twist to it. Now, we've talked previously to our Courier Newsroom colleagues at Courier Texas about what's happening with public education in Texas and the voucher school program there. We've certainly talked to Cam Stevenson from the Copper Courier in Arizona, and now he's out on Capitol Hill, where again, there's continued pushes to use taxpayer dollars to support private, usually religious schools. And of course, every Wednesday at this time, we talk about public education in Wisconsin, and especially the ongoing threat from a voucher program that is rapidly approaching $1 billion in annual cost to taxpayers. And it still seems like a lot of taxpayers don't know that yet, although they're becoming more and more aware of it each time there's yet another school referendum in Wisconsin. So while I'm here in Texas this week, I thought we should maybe find out what is happening here, and are there things that are happening in Texas that we can take away as lessons to protect public education in Wisconsin? One of the groups working hard on this issue is IDRA. That stands for the Intercultural Development Research Association, and the IDRA deputy director is here now, Dr. Chloe Latham Sykes, and joins us from Austin, Texas. Dr. Sykes, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we really appreciate it because, again, you've heard the setup of the problem that we're facing in Wisconsin of helping taxpayers understand that whether they know it or not, they are funding two school systems in our state. And the one is, you know, closing in on a 10-digit figure in the state budget. Can you give us a little background on the challenges that public schools face in Texas?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad that you're covering this topic. You know, this is a new terrain for Texas with this private school voucher program. You know, for Texas has over 5.5 million students in our public school system, pre-K through 12. We serve largest population of emergent bilingual or English learner students. Over half of our public school students are considered economically disadvantaged. You know, we're really diverse and we have a lot of needs. And Texas, unfortunately, has always fallen behind the curve in properly funding our public schools. This was a founding issue for the organization I work for, IDRA, establishing fair school funding across our 1,200 school district and charter schools now across the state. And for many, many years, for decades, we fended off proposals for a private school voucher program until now, unfortunately. And there could be a whole segment on the ins and outs and politics of how it happened. And that might be, you know, part of your questions. But essentially, we're going to hit the ground running next school year with a starting point of a $1 billion private school voucher program. And taxpayers in Texas will be funding two school systems going forward with our now, it'll be a universal and statewide private school voucher program.
And I'm wondering, when you talk about the background of it, I know that here in Wisconsin, the way that we have to remind people is it never grew as a standalone issue. Anytime voucher schools would be put up as a standalone bill, it wouldn't pass or it would get vetoed, or if it was a referendum, it would be taken down. But year after year after year, Republican lawmakers, usually with some Democrats, would insert it into the state budget as something, you know, one of those bills that has to pass. And so by and large, the growth of voucher schools has never been something that's been debated on its own merits. And as we said, it has over the years now been to this point where we're looking at the experience in other states and wondering what it is we might be able to do to stop this from becoming, you know, such a behemoth. But before we get to what we can do, let's continue just emphasizing where we are in Texas and other states right now. I'm starting to see a little bit of even Republican legislators in some of these states going, well, I support, you know, school vouchers. I support private schools, but as a fiscal conservative, I'm starting to get a little bit of concern about how big this is getting. Is there any evidence like that in Texas right now, or is it still full speed ahead for those folks who basically have a blank check for the voucher school program?
Yes. So our private school voucher program is authorized under what was Senate Bill 2 from this past legislative session in the spring that ended this spring in 2025. So this is our rulemaking year. We haven't even seen this fully hit the ground. This program is actually housed not in our education agency. It's housed within our state budget office and the Controller of Public Accounts office. And so they just authorized the organization that's going to be administering applications and providers. It's going to be Odyssey, which is a major tech firm out of New York that's done some of these programs. But there was a lot of pushback in the back and forth in the debates. And this proposal died in 2023. It was a major fight. Like you said, a private school voucher program in 2023 for us was tied to a major school funding bill. And we came back for four special sessions after the regular session ended, the most in Texas history in one calendar year, they had a final giant bill, House Bill 1, that had all the bait in it. It had funding for schools. It had increases to the per pupil allotment, basic allotment. It had teacher pay. It had accountability changes. It had all this stuff, and it had a voucher program. This is fall 2023, and there was a motion on the House floor from a Republican, an outgoing Republican, rural Republican member to strike that article from House Bill 1, to strike it and take out that voucher portion, keep all the school funding bait. And they had the votes. It passed. So then the author took down the whole bill, right? So that was the first time we'd seen the voucher program get to the House floor debate. Our Senate has been passing these out, you know, no problem. But it was the first time it got to the House floor and it died. Now, then we saw a wave of political pressure that got a fair amount of coverage. Millions of dollars coming in from outside sources to the Texas governor to support Republican primary challenges in the spring of 2024. And they were successful, and they got a a new House composition of Republicans that were going to be pro the private school voucher program. And so entering 2025, it was pretty hectic. I mean, we had the bill coming out of the Senate in the first couple weeks of session, which, I mean, you can appreciate. Normally, you're just talking about budget, you're assembling committees. They had it going on in January coming out. And in the House, that's where the fight was always going to be. And so what we ended up seeing, what we knew was going to happen, was there was still a holdout of particularly rural Republican members in Texas who knew this is going to be real harmful to our school districts. And they knew what they were hearing from superintendents and teachers and families. On the day of the vote, they were going to make a motion to have a push it to a referendum in November, put it to the voters, as some other states have done. And the president called the GOP caucus. They put him on speakerphone. They had a caucus meeting the morning of the House vote. And he said, get in line, ultimately. I mean, this has been covered. It was brought, you know, it was put out. And it took a call from the president. And they got in line behind the vote. Two Republicans voted against it on the House floor that evening in April. So there was a lot of holdout till the House debate. But ultimately, I think politics won.
Well, yeah, because they obviously, if they're ready to go in January, then you clearly have outside groups that are doing their homework and are trying to put something through. This is hardly anything that's organic at all. And it's where special interests, you know, have the money to be able to hit the ground running and ram these kinds of things through. We're talking to Chloe Latham Sykes from IDRA, the Intercultural Development Research Association out of Austin, Texas, about the growth of school vouchers and taxpayer funds for them. And so at the heart of some of these Republican fiscal conservatives getting alarmed at the price tag of it. Now, of course, in this case, they were primaried and they were bounced so that the special interests protecting private schools could get their way. But I wonder if, Dr. Sykes, what we learned in there is the path forward is really all about information, making sure not just that these fiscal conservative legislators understand the cost, but that all of their constituents, that all these taxpayers understand. I feel like that's the part that's been missing here in Wisconsin, is enough messaging to help people understand that, hey, nobody's against private schools per se, but it's about our tax dollars going there. Is communication the path forward, the best path forward, or are there other avenues as well?
That was key. That was absolutely key. And the fact is, we know we had a 21-hour committee hearing in the House. That might send chills down your spine about this bill. And it was hundreds of families coming out across the state to say, please don't do this. We know. And that was bipartisan. There was bipartisan pushback saying this is actually not fiscally conservative. The starting point is $1 billion. It's estimated in the first 5 years to go past $10 billion. Again, we're going to see how it's implemented next year. But people understanding it has no real accountability for academic and student achievement or financial accountability. The company that's now been chosen to run it was kicked out of the Idaho program because of fraud. And so spreading that message and the research around these programs are bad for student performance. They are bad for taxpayer accountability. They're bad for state budgets. Just look to Arizona, who has been scrambling over their ballooning private school voucher program. That was a key part of the messaging. And that monitoring and research is something we're going to continue to be lifting up and trying to continue to message. I mean, people feel it. We have school closures going on left and right. And even with some school funding that came down in the legislative session as well, I think the pressure of this program and how it'll grow, as evidenced in other states, is going to be felt very deeply, very quickly.
So what are your next steps? What is the IDRA working on, and how can people learn more about it?
Yes, we have a basic infographic. If you go to our website, idra.org/news/TX voucher law, just to see some of the nuts and bolts of what it is. We have been trying to push people to engage in the rulemaking process of, hey, this program's getting implemented. Your voice still matters, to put some guardrails on this thing. There was just a first round of rules that came out, and there's going to be more. So trying to get people engaged. If they subscribe to IDRA.org, they'll be able to receive all our alerts and infographics, data dashboards, and additional research that we put out to show how this will affect public schools.
And there are all kinds of good, active people with the Wisconsin Public Education Network who I know are taking all of everything that you said to heart, and will be looking for all kinds of other ideas to partner in ways that protect our public schools in Wisconsin and Texas and beyond. Chloe Latham Sykes is the Deputy Director of Policy for IDRA out of Austin, Texas. Dr. Sykes, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for so much background and inspiration going forward.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care now. When we come back in our next hour, we will be talking to Chuck Collins from the group Patriotic Millionaires about the billionaire class in this country. And how do you keep them from, much like the voucher school program, from gobbling up everything? And it involves making some fundamental changes to the system. But again, people got to know about it. And Chuck Collins is trying to do his part. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, let's bring in Jimmy Koskinel, Civic Media Sports Director, to talk about big news in sports, big, massive news in sports. I mean, this is a sports earthquake, talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo being traded from the Milwaukee Bucks. Oh, wait. It's just the latest rumor. And yet we have to talk about it because it seems like every time it happens, oh my God, we might lose Giannis. No, we're not going to lose Giannis. Good morning, Jimmy.
Yeah, good morning. I saw this yesterday. Like, I think like a lot of Bucks fans, you just kind of roll your eyes, open it up.
I didn't even click on it, but you know, people again, hair is on fire in some places.
You know, the difference this offseason is that, you know, the Bucks just traded away Damian Lillard, and he's, you know, one of the NBA's top players, right? He's not going to play this year because of the injury, but people are wondering, well, do the Bucks have a roster that can actually contend? And you know, in a vacuum, you look at the Bucks roster and you're thinking, okay, well, there's obviously, you know, you don't have the star power there. But then you look around the NBA and you look at the Eastern Conference, and there's major injuries now to Tyrese Halliburton at Indiana, Jason Tatum at Boston. So there's something of an opening there. But then you look at some of the context of this latest report and how, you know, the Bucks GM is in Greece trying to figure out where Giannis is going, and Giannis not, you know, unlike most years where he just pretty plainly puts out something saying like, yeah, I ain't going anywhere. You know, this year there's not as much of that, right? So I think every word, every press conference, every single game result is going to be micro-analyzed to death by everybody in national media trying to figure out where Giannis is going. Giannis has been leaving, according to ESPN, for a dozen years.
Oh, that's such wishful thinking. Such wishful thinking. They so want him to go to New York or some other place where they can cover him all the time and just, you know, chew him up and spit him out like they do with everybody else that comes to the Great White Way. And it's just not happening. And I know I might be comparing apples to oranges here, but how brilliant do the Brewers look by comparison, saying to Jackson Churio, here's 8 years. Okay. Can we be, we're not even going to do this rumor game for the next 8 years.
Yeah, at the Brewers locking down a potential star for long term. That's, you know, that's what small markets got to do to survive in baseball. And amazingly, whatever the Brewers are doing is just really exploded this year in terms of the sheer amount of I want to call it luck, but just the ability to, well, some of it's luck, but you know, so, looking at the trades they made in the middle of the season, just the player development, everything coming together in this perfect storm of a baseball team that's a game away from the NLCS right now. This has really been a lot of fun to watch, not only as a fan, but just as somebody who, you know, follows, you know, transactions, follows just kind of the progression of teams. The Brewers have set themselves up pretty well to not only contend this year, obviously, in a year where, you know, if they get to the NLCS, I mean, all bets are off at that point. Playoffs are, you're the playoffs, anything can happen. But you're also poised to contend for years to come. I think that's really exciting. Not, you know, just a baseball fan, a Brewers fan, it's great to see.
It is, and once again, trying to avoid the hair on fire thing, but if/when, you know, the Brewers can eliminate the Cubs and move on, and if the Dodgers hold on to their two-game lead and eventually, you know, take out the Phillies, and we start doing nothing but 2018 deja vu all over again, and how do you get it into people's heads? That was 7 years ago, and none of those people are around. This is a whole new ball game, pun intended. And, you know, like you said, if you get to this level, you better enjoy the ride, because it's clear there's enough talent to take the team this far.
Yeah, I mean, unlike a single elimination format where, you know, upsets are more prone to happen, the Brewers have, you know, in a seven-game series, you take them against anybody. I mean, against the Dodgers this year, they were very competitive. That's one of the things why, like, when you look at the path to getting to the World Series, I feel like there's a little confidence this year. The Brewers are the best run differential in baseball this year, and that's despite starting out 0-4. They've got the best record in baseball, and, you know, they've handled themselves so far in a pretty tense rivalry series with the Cubs in two games. I know that there's two games that begin later today, or at least one game, I should say, because the Brewers went today, it's over, but they go to Chicago for games today and potentially tomorrow. But the Brewers have really asserted themselves well, and they've done it in a lot of different ways this year. I keep saying this when I'm on your show, Pat, but they've done it without relying on one or two guys. It's been everybody. The whole 26-man roster has shown up to play, and there's a different star every night. And I think that's part of why, you know, unlike the past runs by the Brewers where you're looking, well, what are the stars going to do? If the star player doesn't go 2-for-4 with a home run and 3 RBI, there's no chance. The star pitcher doesn't.
We don't have an Aaron Judge.
Yeah,
what Aaron Judge did last night.
Yeah. That's been the great thing about them this year.
Yeah, Aaron Judge can save, you know, a Yankees entire, you know, series like he did last night to keep them alive, and that's just not the way that we go here. I have to have some fun with this, though, because here's Tony putting up, I thought ironically, hey, good luck getting through Cleveland, and I thought he was having some fun with his Guardians being eliminated. I think he's talking back about the Bucks. I could be wrong, but I think when he says good luck getting through Cleveland, it's a Bucks thing. But Tony, I'm turning it into a Guardians thing, so thanks for the irony. I think that's terrific.
Well, hey, the Packers didn't get through the Browns either, so it could be talking about last couple of weeks ago. So.
It could be. It could very well be. So we've got, again, Game 3 is this afternoon. The pregame coverage begins at 3:30 on several of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. And, yeah, as I said, it's a full boatload of Division Series games today. And so it's Seattle-Detroit at 2 o'clock, and Seattle's up 2-1, so they could clinch here. And then you've got the Brewers-Cubs at 4 o'clock, Milwaukee up 2-0. Blue Jays-Yankees at 6, where, again, Toronto is up 2-1. And then Phillies-Dodgers at 8, where the Dodgers are up 2-0. Is this where I ask you for your bold prediction for tonight, or are we not in the prediction business here?
ALDS extended their series last night, NLDS tonight. I honestly feel like it's chalk. I think that we're done with the NLDS after today. That's my prediction.
Whoa.
And then we are on to the NLCS.
There we go. Okay. There. It. That's bold. That's bold, as bold as Tony saying I was really talking about the Bucks. Sure you were, Tony. Again, you put the comment up, I get to play it whenever I want to play it. Jimmy Cuska, thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
See you.
Have a great day. All right. Coming up in our next hour, we'll be talking to Earl Ingram right after the 8 o'clock news on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.